This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 219 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. Kareem Hunt is a Cleveland Brown. I'm sure you've heard plenty of takes on Kareem Hunt this week, and I'm guessing a lot of those takes had to do with whether or not he should even be playing in the league. I'm not going to dig into that today. I have my opinion on the subject, but those types of takes aren't for this podcast. One thing I did mention on Twitter this week, though, was how it seems clear that Cleveland doesn't necessarily value running backs the way that I would. And that's fine, I'm not a GM. I'm just a fantasy football and football analyst who crunches numbers in his mom's basement. But the reason it's clear is because if the belief was that running backs weren't all that valuable, then getting Kareem Hunt along with the baggage that comes with Kareem Hunt would never happen. Because we know, no matter how you feel about the situation surrounding Kareem Hunt, there is baggage. And while I was tweeting about that with some of the good people that are part of football Twitter, I mentioned that the Chiefs didn't miss a beat without Kareem Hunt this year. And that was met with some adversity. Now, first off, if you saw the conversation, the back and forth on Twitter, I'm not calling anyone out here. We're talking football. Disagreeing on a football-related topic is absolutely okay. It's okay to disagree. But no, I don't believe Kareem Hunt was missed all that much by Kansas City's offense this year. And I don't think that he had anything to do with them losing the AFC Championship. Let's just look at the numbers. Kareem Hunt played through Week 11 for the Chiefs. And he played in every game leading up to that point, carrying the ball at least 10 times in each contest. From Week 1 through Week 11, the Chiefs averaged 36.7 points per game. That's a lot of points per game. That was with Kareem Hunt. Without him in the regular season, that points per game total dropped to 32.2. So clearly this has to do with Kareem Hunt, right? No, not exactly. This is very much a correlation and causation issue. Over this time, NFL points per game averages also decreased. The average team saw their points per game fall by about 2.5 points. Now, that's not as significant as Kansas City's 4.5 points per game, but it helps explain some of Kansas City's dip in scoring. All the while, Kansas City's yards per drive rate dropped by 0.4 yards. That yardage drop was directly in line with the league's average across the final 5 weeks of the regular season versus the first 11. Kansas City also went from having the second best touchdown rate per drive over the first 11 weeks to the best one without Kareem Hunt. And it was the best one by far. And they went from either kicking a field goal or scoring a touchdown on about 57% of their drives to doing so on 52% of them. But that 52% number was the best in football. Their drop in scoring rate was completely normal compared to the league's average. And not only that, within our with Kareem Hunt sample, we've got some games that ended up shooting out. There was the Patriots game that saw 83 total points, and there was the epic Rams game that saw 105 total points. I think it would be foolish to say that those games were shootouts because Kareem Hunt was in the backfield. But there's more to this split with and without Kareem Hunt. It just so happens that Sammy Watkins missed all of those games as well. Watkins was sidelined from weeks 12 through week 17, and he missed week 10 as well, where the Chiefs scored just 26 points, which was below their season average. And because of that game where they scored 26 points, if you look at the Chiefs' splits with and without Sammy Watkins, they're even stronger than the Kareem Hunt splits. That's not me saying that Sammy Watkins was this massive, massive piece of the Chiefs' offense. It's just an example of how splits like this can work. But you can look and compare at Damian Williams versus Kareem Hunt straight up. According to NumberFire's expected points model, Williams was adding about 0.06 expected points per rush in the regular season. That's the exact same average as Kareem Hunt. But Damian Williams had a 54% success rate this past year, which is absolutely absurd, by the way, when Kareem Hunt's was less than 46%. The Chiefs actually saw their success rate on the ground rise without Kareem Hunt this season. It got better. Rushing production in the NFL is largely replaceable. Where arguments about running back value should be made is with the passing game. And Hunt was better than both Williams and Spencer Ware through the air. Hunt was absurdly efficient as a pass catcher in 2018. The main problem in strictly focusing on that, though, is that passing effectiveness for running backs isn't very sticky year over year, and we also run into sample size issues. You may be saying, well, Damian Williams only ran the ball 50 times during the regular season, so our sample on him is too small to draw conclusions. Well, okay, Kareem Hunt only caught 26 passes in the regular season, so his yards per reception rate is going to wildly fluctuate based on the fact that he broke two of them for 50-plus yard plays. And I'm not discounting that either. I think we can even conclude and say that Kareem Hunt brings more to the passing game than Damian Williams does. On the ground, the production is replaceable. Through the air, maybe you're adding more expected points. The problem, and this is what I wrote about in my running back study that I did last offseason, the problem is that it's very rare for a running back to consistently match the per-target effectiveness of an average wide receiver in the NFL. They may break a big touchdown every once in a while, or they may see a lot of volume and rack up a ton of receptions, but that's still not an effective way for an offense to move the football down the field. Until we see offensive coordinators using their running backs more intelligently through the air, the delta between one running back as a receiver to the next still isn't very significant, especially when you consider the alternatives. The alternatives being other wide receivers. So going back to the original topic at hand, no, I don't think the Chiefs' AFC Championship loss had anything to do with Kareem Hunt getting cut. Honestly, if it did, it would be one of the last things that mattered. Especially when you consider that Damian Williams in that game had nearly 100 total yards while scoring 3 times. And Patrick Mahomes missed him on a wide open throw in the first half. Not only that, guys, but the Chiefs still scored 31 points in the AFC Championship. And that was a game that was played in the freezing cold. And it was against a defense that then allowed just 3 points to a top 5 offense in the league in the Super Bowl. I'm very much a believer that situation is everything for running back success. I think Kareem Hunt is more talented than Damian Williams, just like I think that Saquon Barkley is the most talented running back in football. That doesn't equate to value. Saying a player is great doesn't mean that that player is valuable. So that's my take on Kareem Hunt and some more running back value information. There's more to talk about though today, so let's get to these mailbag questions. This first one's from @FFPollTsunami. Hey JJ, how does James Conner not benefit from Brown being gone? Also, if he doesn't benefit, who do you like out of McDonald, Juju, and James Washington? I think Connor could benefit in that the Steelers may see somewhat more of a run-heavy game plan, but that was going to happen anyway. Pittsburgh ranked first in overall pass-to-rush attempt ratio last year, and they were first in ratio in neutral game scripts. That number was bound to regress a bit entering 2019, and maybe it'll dip even more if AB is out of the picture. That's a big reason why we shouldn't just automatically assume someone like Juju is able to do what he did in 2018 here in 2019. Like if AB were to stick around, I would expect my projection for Juju to be lower than his 2018 season total because of the change in philosophy in Pittsburgh. At least in the volume statistics, maybe not in touchdowns. But if AB is gone, what it does for Juju is that it allows him to maintain that volume a little bit easier. If the Steelers are more run heavy, which they would be no matter what, Juju will need a higher target share to maintain the volume. And that's going to be a lot easier to do without Antonio Brown in the offense. And really, the answer is that everyone maybe outside of Juju will benefit from AB leaving. Washington then becomes the number 2 wideout on the team. Vance McDonald could be used more. This is just what happens when someone who's basically seen a 26% target share or higher each year leaves a team. It opens up opportunity. I think the biggest jump would probably come from James Washington, though. They could always draft or sign a wide receiver, but I liked him as a prospect, and even though he wasn't amazing in year one, he should get a shot to be the number 2 option there if AB is gone. He'd be the one to get the biggest boost because Juju was already really good. And Juju would also play outside more and see tougher coverage. So with Juju, AB being gone is more about sustainability from a fantasy perspective, while Washington gets a lot more opportunity. This next question is from @KFBNFL. Dynasty startup with auction draft. What is the best way to draft in this format? Full point PPR, 6 point quarterback touchdowns, 25 roster spots, starting 1 quarterback, 2 running backs, 2 wide receivers, 2 flex, 1 tight end. Cheers, Kev. So I don't care much about the 6 point per touchdown pass thing. I'm planning on doing a show later on this offseason, but unless you're starting more than 1 quarterback, you can still devalue the position. Since I build around wide receivers in Dynasty, and since this is a full PPR league and you can flex 2 of them, I would go wide receiver heavy in this format. Maybe you get a stud running back, but I would go for wideouts early and often. Or in your case, since it's an auction, I'd spend on wide receiver. This next question is from @Tom_McGovern17. Wait a month and trade for Chubb? One of the things that I tweeted after Kareem Hunt signed with Cleveland was I thought that it was a good time to buy Nick Chubb in Dynasty. Anytime a viable running back joins a team, the consensus should be that the running back is going to dig into the workload of the other backs on that team. It would make zero sense to say that Nick Chubb's fantasy value is now better with Kareem Hunt than without Kareem Hunt. I do think, though, that the market may overrate this signing, and that's why Chubb is a buy for me immediately. He should still be the workhorse in that backfield, and you know he's going to see work to start the year, depending on how long Kareem Hunt is suspended. I don't think that you've got to just wait a month. Just send some offers to the person who has Chubb in your league right now and see if they bite. If you want to wait, then wait, but I don't see an issue with doing it right now. This next question is from at Beerswater. He says, what do you expect from Denver and Seattle backfields in 2019? Please and thanks. Good question. The short answer is I have no idea. We've got to sort of go on feel right now, so I'll talk through some logic with this. The upside with Royce Freeman seeing a larger rushing share is twofold, in my opinion. You've got a smaller back in Philip Lindsay who may not be able to handle a big workload year over year, and then you have a new regime in Denver. From a projection standpoint, at the very least, I'd expect a similar split as we saw last season. So Freeman can grab hold of maybe 40% of the team's rushes. But then the upside exists if the new regime does actually want to feature Royce Freeman a bit more. And I sort of feel the same way about Seattle. It would only make sense for them to want to feature Rashad Penny more than they did in 2018, so we'll probably see some shift in rushing share there. I say it would only make sense because he was banged up last year, and they did invest a first rounder to get him. I know it doesn't mean as much in Seattle, but it means something. And Mike Davis is a free agent. He might not be on the team next season. The one thing with Seattle that's interesting is that they were this really, really run-heavy team in 2018, but their pass-to-rush ratio didn't line up with how they scored touchdowns. That was the case in 2017 when they seemed to not be able to just score rushing touchdowns, but the Seahawks also had a pass-to-rush ratio that year of 1.36. That fell to 0.8 in 2018. And their pass-to-rush touchdown ratio in 2018 was ninth highest in football, despite being such a run-heavy team. Now that all plays into Russell Wilson's absurd touchdown rate that he had last year. That's not repeatable. So if we assume Seattle's going to score as many touchdowns this year, then we've got to also assume that the running backs are going to benefit, even if the team is a little bit more pass heavy. That's why I think that backfield is in way better shape fantasy-wise. I do expect Penny to see more work, and the same goes with Royce Freeman. But with Freeman, my fear is the offense won't be as strong as a place like Seattle, and the offensive line may not be as good next year either. This next question is from at John042119. Is Julio a good sell high in Dynasty this offseason, depending on return, obviously, since he's recently 30? Does it depend on if the team is in win now mode? I think selling players like Julio Jones always depends on your current roster situation. If you're in win now mode, it'd be a tough sell unless you're able to get an elite piece in return that can help right away. I generally have a 3-year window with Dynasty, and I think Julio can still give us a couple of good seasons. Maybe not all three of those seasons, so I'll devalue him a bit because of that, but he's also a mid to late second round pick in startups. That feels about right as long as you're able to get younger assets around him at wide receiver so that you're not screwed when his time runs out. So no, I don't think Julio is necessarily a sell right now unless your team is absolute crap. This next question is from at BrockStew77. How does the Flacco trade affect Cortland Sutton's value? I don't think it moves the needle tremendously because it wasn't like the Broncos would have some top-tier quarterback over the next couple of seasons anyway. Realistically, they could have done worse. But I'm certainly not bullish on this 34-year-old quarterback who's had one of the worst adjusted net yards per attempt rates over the last 2 years. No matter if he knows the system and has thrived in that system historically. Honestly, part of me wants to say that Sutton is a sell. But I also don't want to go that far because I do think he's really talented. And that's part of the problem. But it's not a great situation overall. That's going to do it for today's show. Thanks to all of you guys for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. And I'm also on Twitter, at LateRoundQB. If you've got a question for the Mailbag Show next week, you can hit me up on there or email me at jj@numberfire.com. Thanks, everyone. I appreciate you. Enjoy your weekend.